lost the weight upon my shoulder. Now it's easier to walk. I can see the road before me. I am not afraid to fall.
Okay, all right. Welcome to our episode today. We're gonna do just me and Lindsay today.
Yeah. Be a fun little change for a little bit.
Yes. We're going to chat about a book that we talked about, you know, doing a book club for called Good Inside by Dr. Becky Kennedy.
And a lot of you probably have heard of her. She's awesome.
Yeah. She's on lots of podcasts. She has a TED Talk. She has her book and like such helpful parenting tips.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
She's awesome. Yeah. And then we thought we would talk about just a little bit of our own personal parenting transitions. And then we're going to give you guys kind of like a highlight of some of the parenting episodes we've had this year.
Yeah. We've actually had a lot.
Yeah. There's been a lot back. And they're so different, all of them, because everyone has these different transitions in parenting, but we can learn so much from all of them.
Yes.
So,
and it's just different stages or different ways of parenting, different, I don't know, age groups or situations. And I felt like it.
Right.
We had just a lot of good insight from our guests that we want to just kind of summarize.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, as we were chatting about what we wanted to start off with in the episode, we were like, even just some of our own parenting transitions that we think down the road, it might be fun to interview each other about some of these, because like some of them are bigger ones and it would probably almost take up a whole episode just to really like talk about what we went through with it and what we learned.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. Do you want to talk about some of the ones?
Yeah. I was just thinking like overall, like I'm going to guess that the majority of our guests, I mean, our guests and our listeners are parents. So, and it's a transition, and it's not just a transition becoming a parent. It is a transition becoming a parent to one kid and to two kids. And, and then it's a transition from going to like baby to toddler and toddler to, you know, preteen, and, you know, and on and on. And I kind of have the, I think unique, I've realized, spread and maybe because I have four kids and they're all far apart. So I have like a 23-year-old, I have a 19-year-old, almost 20, actually Saturday, Whitney's birthday, although I guess in the, it'll be in the past, she'll be 20. True. So yeah, so 23, happy birthday, 20, Whitney. Yes. Yeah. A 16 and a 10. And so I'm going through totally different stages with each of them, really.
Yeah, that's true.
All
they're
the time.
All in different phases of their growing up.
And sometimes when I think back to like having Peyton, and Peyton was so different, I talked about him in Margaret's episode, he was end up being in the hospital for the first 2 months of his life and then in and out of the hospital for the next year and a half. That was so different than most people's first child.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or ever any of their children. And then Whitney comes along and, this was, I think what I was going to focus on for, because obviously I could go on and on about all the different transitions.
Right.
Each kid is so different. So it's like transitions times four for me.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
You know, it's a big deal. So I feel like when Peyton was a baby, you know, we were so focused on him. I talked about it in Margaret's episode that I forgot I was a wife. I forgot that like my husband and I needed to like cultivate our relationship because I was so focused on Peyton. And I do think we can all do that as parents is get wrapped up in our child and our children and have to remember that we have to take care of ourselves. We need to take care of our other relationships. And then that makes us stronger for, you know, to be a parent. But anyway, so with Peyton, it's more of the transition of deciding to have Whitney. So Peyton was like, so, there was just so many things going on, you know, medical appointments, therapy appointments, and just dealing with kind of his, some of his behavioral stuff that we didn't know what was going on because we didn't realize how much, you know, some of this sickness had affected his development. But, we just decided, okay, you know what? We're going to have another kid. We want another kid. He's going to be three. We don't want him to be super far apart. And, so we had Whitney, and what's crazy, and this is funny because I don't even think this is a, not even a hard transition. This is just different than we expected.
Yeah.
So we have Whitney, and, at the time Peyton was still struggling with his speech and some of his interactions with people. And we knew he understood us, but he just couldn't really talk. So anyway, so we have Whitney, and this is kind of like a cute story in our house because we're like, yeah, Peyton just didn't want to talk till he could talk to his sister. So he waited until she was born to talk to her, and immediately, he started talking.
Oh, wow.
And wanting to talk to the baby. So he was always like, hi, baby. And he wanted to like, this is my arm. This is your finger. Like all of a sudden we were like, and he even spoke more than we thought or knew more than we thought because all of a sudden it just came out. So I was thinking the transition of like having siblings is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's true.
Like because their relationship was really they were really close and Peyton was a really good big brother. And we laughed because Whitney's like, I never had to be creative when I was little because Peyton had it all planned out for me. Like, So when they got a little bit older, it was like every day Peyton had a plan and he was very into being like playing pretend and like they would go to work and they'd clean their car and they would, I don't know, have all these pretend things. But, so I think that's, I'm going to wrap this up. So that's an interesting thing because they were 3 years apart in like chronological age, but like they were literally seemed closer in age because of his, some of his delays, but also he really was a big brother to her. And so I feel like a lot of people sometimes ask me if they're twins because he was kind of small for his age at first when he was trying to like kind of physically get better.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that was interesting. So then I thought about my daughter, Kate. So she's 6 years from her next sibling. And that's different to raise her. She's very much wanting a lot of attention from my husband and I, wants to play games with us, is much more into like playing by herself and like when having her stuffed animals and they're like real to her and, you know, and so it's, I don't know, it's kind of a different way of raising kids because she doesn't have this sibling to play with. What there, it comes with fighting too, like, and Kate never fights with anybody because she's so far apart from all my, there's no reason to fight. No one's going to fight over a toy. Nobody's going to fight over clothes or like who's doing what, because Coleman's 6 years older than her.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So it's just like, I don't know, an interesting, I think it's like, wow, every family is so different. Every child is so different. Every, like being different ages makes it so different.
Yeah. When you realize like their placement in the family kind of creates a whole different experience growing up also.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, same parents, but I think that's why sometimes they say like kids can look back and feel like they were raised in the same family, but have like a really, really different experience.
Because, and I think I'm a little bit more patient, better mom too, because I feel bad for some of my earlier kids. I'm like, wow.
I feel the same. Yeah.
I was so young and I was immature and I was trying to figure out how to be a parent. And so I feel like Kate, has a different, in so many ways, just has a different parent.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just gain perspective with time. Mm-hmm. Like you realize like, oh, those little things that frustrated me. And also I just let things go now that I wouldn't.
Right.
I mean, I remember with Luke, my first, I like took it so seriously that they're not supposed to watch TV till they're like two or something. Mm-hmm. Like to the point where I was holding him as a baby and I would like block his vision. So he wouldn't see well, the TV. Maybe Corey did it a little more than me. I don't know. We both were like stressed about this. Mm-hmm. And I think about all the things I did for Luke to try to like make it, you know, just do all the right things. But it's just funny because I didn't really do those things for any of the other kids because I kind of had to let that go. And they all ended up turning out all right, I think. I mean, everything's going pretty well. But I mean, they all have their struggles, obviously. But it's just funny the things that we stress out about with the first that we kind of realize.
Like I always think of the Binky thing. Like if it dropped on the ground, you had to like boil it. And then my other kids, I'd like look at it and think, oh, it's fine.
There wipe dust it off.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's interesting. I love that. And so mine, I was thinking, it's funny that we both kind of thought about like the order of our kids and how it just like our unique situations with that. Cause mine, I thought about was, so it's funny that the 3 year thing, this is probably goes back to my personality a little bit about, but I remember like researching previous to having kids, what's like the best age like gap?
Yeah.
And people would say like 3 years is really good because you get, your body gets a little break. The kids have a little bit more distance between each other so that, but they're still close enough that they can be friends.
Yeah. And you're not raising like two babies at a time or two toddlers at a time. Like the one can start doing things for themselves while you're taking care of this baby.
Yeah. So I remember saying like, okay, we'll just time our kids like all 3 years apart and we'll probably have like, you know, four or whatever. I even think at the time I thought maybe five, but so we had Luke and he took a little longer and not super long, but like 6 months at the time when you're young felt a little long, like, oh, finally we're pregnant or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then had him. And I was like, how much of this do I say? Which it's not even that personal, but I had been, you know, nursing him and was in the process of weaning him off. And you know how you take like the mini and then ended up getting pregnant. Like,
oh, you're like, okay, they're not going to be 3 years apart.
He
they're
was only
be
10 months old when I got pregnant.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't think I like thought about that. I knew they were close in age, but I didn't really like really think because right now it's not a big deal. It's probably fun, but when they're younger, it's so hard.
Yeah. So they were only 19 months apart. And I know there's people that have them a lot closer than that. Mm-hmm. So that's not the closest, but I just wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
And, but it actually ended up working out great. But I just remember when I got pregnant and I was just so nervous because I was like, oh my heck. And I only had one kid, but you know how it is with your first and yours was even a lot more to adjust to because Peyton had all the health issues. But I just think being a mom was so much more work than I realized and just so much more consuming.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking like, how am I going to do this? How, you know, but then Hallie came along and she was such a just the cutest little happiest baby.
Oh, that makes it nice.
Oh, yeah. She was so cute. And and then I remember thinking she is just going to be the shy little like calm, because she just had this just like happy demeanor about her. But then she started walking and she was just like
crazy into
everything. Yeah. Cause you know, her personality, she's very she's tenacious so and, but she's always just been such a happy kid. So it nice. Worked out great. And what you said about Peyton and Whitney reminded me of Luke and Hallie. They played together so well, always coming up with little scenarios and like almost like acting out plays.
Peyton would like teach Whitney the lines to like a show, because he could memorize movies and books really well. So he'd like, okay, Whitney, now say this.
Oh, cute. Yeah.
Yeah, and do little plays and stuff. Yeah. It's so cute. And so sometimes I feel this mom guilt that I didn't have another kid after Kate, because you had your twins.
Yes.
So it's like you have this big gap, but they have each other.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I should hurry up and get pregnant again after this, which really quick, because I was old, you know, and I had Kate. And then it was like, oh my gosh, I don't think I can do this. But well, every once in a while, I'm like, oh my gosh, like she is really a happy child though. And she is living, I have to remind myself, and this is probably my whole take on this. Every kid is going to live a different life, because they're different and you're in a different stage of life, but it doesn't mean it's bad or wrong. Like just because with Kate's and Coleman's life, even it, and I even feel bad sometimes, because I do feel like when then all of a sudden like Coleman comes along and they all three kind of played together, just because Peyton was really good at pretend play. And so he was still doing that, I think, at an older age than some kids do, and brought his siblings in, and Kate never had that. But it doesn't mean that Kate doesn't have a good life.
Yeah.
It just means it's different than theirs. And I can't feel guilty about that, because at some point you have to stop having kids.
I know. That's what I was going to say, is I feel like you probably feel that at the end of any, like at the end, when you're done having kids, because you're like, oh, what if I added another? And so at some point we all have to figure out when we are done.
Yeah.
But something else I was thinking of when you said that was, I think I realized that even with my kids' life compared to my own, like I kind of went through this thing where I wanted my kids to have all the same experiences that I had, and oh, I need to show them all the same movies and we need to go do the same activities. Yep. And then finally you realize like, but they live in a different time. Mm-hmm. Like it's a different, I can't recreate my childhood for them.
Right.
I can try to like bring in things that I loved about it, but they are their own people, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, that, and so my other transition I was going to say is we did end up having a bigger gap in the middle than I thought. Cause I think I still thought, oh, I will have my next ones after three, or my next one after 3 years of Hallie. Cause I thought, okay, I think I can do this maybe 3 or 4 years, even though those two were close. But then it, so we thought that we would, but then it took a couple years longer to, and then we ended up having twins. And then I had to have that thing of like, my last two were twins and it was so fun. And that is so unique, but I didn't get one more just single. So kind of also realizing like,
almost like you had two twins, sets of twins in a way.
I never really had just like a baby. I had Luke by himself for a while, but I never really. So sometimes I look back and get a little sad that I didn't just have the experience of like one baby. Mm-hmm. Well, like you had with Kate, but then I'm like, again, they all have different experiences. And would I ever wish that my twins didn't have each other?
Yeah.
No, like they have such a special, and we love the twin experience was so fun.
Yeah. And I think twins are so
cute. Different.
I was, I was kind of wishing for, my husband was not wishing for twins, but I was just for that purpose. Like
they
would have each other. This might be hard, but they'll have each other. And and Kate, it was fun to have my older siblings be so helpful with Kate and be really involved more of taking care of her. They weren't just like, oh, be careful, hold the baby. Like they literally could like,
they could help. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they were so much older. So, and that's a cool experience, I think, for her. And she, I do feel bad, cause sometimes she's like, I've never really been around babies or helped babies. And I'm like, well, you'll probably be an aunt earlier than most people are.
Yeah.
I mean, not that any of my kids are having kids soon, but like she will more than earlier than
they
are.
She's only 10. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. She will. So anyway, I just, parenting is so interesting and it's so individual. It's so different, but I do think there's some key things and key ways to be a parent that Dr. Becky gives us to kind of help us in these transitions of kids. So maybe we can move on to her book. But the first part is the book is called Good Inside, A Guide to Becoming the Parent You Want to Be. I think we all want to be good parents, and and we have to give ourselves grace because no one's a perfect parent. Right. But I think that's her whole point, is like, we are all good inside and so are our kids. So we all want it to be good and right. But things happen where you flip out and don't know how to handle a tantrum, or they have a tantrum and you don't deal with it right in the moment. I don't know. It's just so hard sometimes.
I know.
To be a parent. But some of her, I don't even know what you'd call them. Like,
just like her advice, or kind of her method. Really.
Yeah. Maybe a method is the right way. I think is really just powerful, and but from the beginning, just automatically say that your kids are good inside.
Yeah.
And that they're not meaning to be like hard or rebellious, but so there's something else probably going on in their behavior.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool. I'll say really quick, but just to give a little background for people that may not know who Dr. Becky is, or maybe you do know, but don't really know like where she came from or what. I just remember, I can't remember if it was in the book or one of the podcasts I've listened to her on, but she has been a psychologist. She has a PhD, mm-hmm. done it for a long time, but around the time of COVID, like 2020, she was realizing like, oh, I can't meet in person with people. I think I'm just going to start this Instagram page and just share tips for parents. Mm-hmm. So it was literally only in 2020 that she started
it. Wow, that she got really big.
Millions of followers. And she even said, she goes, I don't know how, but it took off. And for some reason, what I was saying really resonated with people. I think what it is it was kind of revolutionary at the time. This like good inside, I think, because we all kind of feel that. We all know our kids are good inside, mm-hmm. but to really put words to it and understand how to kind of frame our interactions with them so that we're pointing that out to them. We're not making them feel bad when they have bad moments. We're not, you know, we're focusing on,
we're not shaming them, really them to feel that. A certain way.
Yeah, because it's easy to know that, but then not know how to handle it.
Yes.
So that what I love about it is it's not really, like she says, she's like, I don't do reward charts. I don't do punishment
time things.
Out. I don't do, she's like, it's more just like, how do you frame situations to your kids or just like teach them in the moment?
Right. And know? I think it's hard because sometimes, especially as a young mom, I think I was like, first of all, I was still growing up a little bit and maturing. Yeah. And so I didn't know how to handle some things. But also like there wasn't really, you heard these things. Well, do this sticker chart or do the timeout or, and it, like she said in her book, she's like, it just didn't feel good. Like it doesn't feel good to tell your kid, go sit in a corner and have a timeout. Mm-hmm. And is that going to fix it next time?
Yeah, I know. And it's so hard because I even remember, I think I did do timeouts with my younger ones and it was like love and logic. I remember we took mm-hmm. a love and logic course and there were some good things in that, but then some things that seemed a little extreme to me. And I think you can use a combination of different methods, but I really like, there's nothing that she said that I don't feel like I agree with. Like if I really think about it, I'm like, wow, that makes total sense.
I think a lot of it is to be kind of emotionally mature enough to admit your fault as a parent in the moment. Like, okay, you were having a meltdown, but I also didn't handle it well. And mm-hmm. I flipped out at you and I'm sorry that I did that and let's handle this the right way. But I think it's almost like you're reading beyond the moment, like whatever's happening in the moment, whether it's a teenager yelling at you or a little kid throwing a tantrum, like what is behind these behaviors? Not, mm-hmm. and how did she say it? I feel like it's like, it's your, separate who you are, which is your identity, with what you did, which is your behavior.
Yes.
Because we want to say that their identity is a good kid. They're mm-hmm. good inside, but their hate behavior might not have been good behavior, or either our behavior wasn't good behavior.
Yeah. And that reminds me of when she said in the book or maybe one of the podcasts, I can't remember.
Yeah. All goes together.
But she said negative behavior is a lack of skill in kids. So it's not that they are bad or that they want to be bad, but they aren't born with these skills. Like we have to teach them, but it kind of, so just remember they're good inside and how can we separate the behavior from the person?
Right.
Yeah. And then did you want to say, so she has a TED talk.
Oh yeah. And it's so really good.
Even mm-hmm. if like you listeners haven't, you know, listen to her on anything. I mean, even just go watch the TED Talk.
Yeah, because it's like 12 minutes or whatever.
It's not very long. Mm-hmm. And she says the number one strategy for parenting should be repair.
Right, which I'm like, okay, we never talk about that word.
No.
Repair. That is, we say mm-hmm. apologize. We say maybe mend or something. Mm-hmm. But like repair, I love it. She says repair is the act of going back to a moment of disconnection, taking responsibility for your behavior and acknowledging the impact it had on another. And then she talks about that it's different than an apology. It's like, it can, and she said, it's never too late. Cause some people are like, oh, my kids are teenagers now. And I didn't use this method. And so I failed as a parent, but she's like, no, this literally could be like, it could happen anytime. You can go mm-hmm. back and say in this moment as a parent, I didn't handle this well. And I am so sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, do we want to talk about it or do we, and then even now, if you're still in the middle of parenting, like acknowledge, like if some, you know, your kid screams and you're having a moment and they go slam their door, and they're like, fine, I'll just let them stay in there. It's like, actually, maybe you go talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you're the adult and you need to be the one, I think. And I think she tries to say, this is not like gentle parenting. It's not mm-hmm. like, oh, let your kids take control. They have all the control. It's all the parents' fault. No, but it is the parents' responsibility, mm-hmm. I think, to.
Yeah. Well, and she kind of said about the repair thing, like I remember her using the example of, you know, say your kid freaks out at you and says that they hate you. And you freak out back at them and say like, mm-hmm. you don't talk or whatever. Maybe you raise your voice and then they go to their room and you go and tell them like, I want to apologize about this. They may not want to hear it yet. They may not be ready, but if mm-hmm. you still repair and try to repair in that moment, then you are like, they know at least, okay, my mom's not mad at me. They don't have to sit in the shame of feeling like, oh my heck, not even my parents. Cause I think that's the example she uses. Like, you want your kids to know that there's no emotion that you can't handle that they're giving out.
Right.
You know, and that, and then also she, I love this, that it was like, I believe you that this was upsetting to you. She said that's another,
to validate kind of their feelings.
To validate them. You can still hold to like, you know, I don't appreciate you talking to me that way, or I can't remember exactly how she said it, but I believe you that this was frustrating for you.
Yeah.
And I understand where you're coming from. And I'm just really sorry that I lost my cool.
Yeah. Which I think is good. I think validating, because they're having kind of an emotion for a reason. So if you validate, I can understand, you know, why that was hard and why you acted this way. But also, you know, that saying of like, we can't really control how we feel, but we can control how we act with those feelings. Mm-hmm. And I think teaching kids that, like, it's okay to be mad or sad or frustrated, but to teach them the behaviors where you can't flip out and like hit something or throw something or tell someone you hate them, like in the moment, to kind of teach the like regulation of emotions.
Right. And I think what she said about that is, that's why it's so important that if we acknowledge those feelings and say, I believe you that you're mad or sad or stressed, then they start to feel like, okay, those emotions aren't too big, that they're actually scaring my parent or making that I'm not a bad person, because my parent can acknowledge that I'm feeling that way. And then that's actually what helps the kids emotionally regulate, because they feel like my parents see me, they understand. And anyway, she says that's like kind of the key to helping kids emotionally regulate, is to actually acknowledge their feelings and not make them feel guilty that they're feeling them. But like that, there's ways that we can manage them.
Yeah. And I love that she says some of the things, like after you do the repair, what happens after that is you're adding safety, connection, coherence, love, and goodness. And that helps end self-blame and turns it into self-trust. So you're letting your child know, like, you're telling them it is okay to have these feelings.
Well, yeah, I think with the repair, like, and she even said, she used the example of, say that something comes up from the past. I think it's so, and like she said, we all have the tendency to self-defend and just give, but instead of doing that, just be like, I'm so sorry that I acted that way in that moment. And I'm sorry if I made you feel unsafe or that, because I never want you to feel that way.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they feel secure again. Mm-hmm. But if they have in the back of their mind, like, oh, remember when mom, I don't know. It's just, I think it's really powerful that, and I think it's so interesting that in all her research and all the people that she's helped, she's like, repair is the number one thing.
I know. Yeah. And that's what she's realized. And I love that, like, the steps of repair, she said, like, name what happened, whether it happened 5 minutes ago or 5 years ago, if you're wanting to repair, you name what happened and you take responsibility and then state what you would do next time. Mm-hmm. And I just think that is, I don't know. It seems so simple. I know it's so hard sometimes when emotions are high, or when you think, well, maybe they just forgot about it and we can move on, you know, and I'll do, you know, but I think that going back to repair is just an act of like she says, connection and love. And you're giving your child, you're letting them know you're not perfect and you don't think you are, and you make mistakes too. And so can they, but you can also repair those things.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, and I think she talks about this too, how powerful it is that it's not just about your relationship with your child, but what example are you setting for them when they need to repair relationships in the future? You're teaching them how to apologize, how to repair, because I think
with their spouse, you know, with their friends, with their colleagues, with their children. Yeah.
Yeah. If they experience that and see, it's basically like we're teaching them, and that's the key to a good relationship. Like she says, like, if you can repair, you know, really repair things, like, you can mend almost any relationship.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Realized as we wanted to do this book club book and just talk about parenting and all the parenting, episodes that have come up, Brooke Romney was our very first, interview of the year of this season. And she talks about teens and preteens a lot. And I think it's cool. We'll just kind of go over a few of these and give you a little summary. But she talks about two really important things to do with teenagers is, one, to make sure you increase your positive interactions. So sometimes it's easy to be like, you know, clean your room and you didn't do this, and I can't believe you didn't have your phone homework. What's wrong with your, you know, to make sure that your positive interactions are above those, like, and they're far. I think she said like 7 to 9 a day.
Yeah.
Or even more, is like,
they really outweigh the negative ones.
So that it's okay. 'Cause it's okay. You need to tell your kid, you didn't clean your room and I need you to, and you need to get your homework done 'cause you have a C, but you also have to make sure that there's positive interactions, like that you're complimenting them on things that they have done well, you know, or something about their personality.
Yeah.
And then the other thing she said is to make sure you're interested in something they're interested in. Even if it's not interesting to you. I think she talked about like Pokemon cards or something. She's like, okay. Yeah. But I have to, and then how you can connect with your child if you're connecting with something they love.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I thought it was such good advice. And the whole episode has such good advice.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one we found was Rachel Garrett, and she's awesome. She talked about like foster parenting, and also she's done work, in the system, like with helping foster kids and different things, being a CASA. But a quote she had that stood out to us is she said, "It's easy to want to curate or be really involved in who our kids are. And sometimes we overlook the beauty and the awe of who they already are."
I love that.
So I know. And I think that's so true. We just need to remember, like, you know, instead of thinking, oh, I want to change this, or I got to lead them in this direction or this or that, like just focusing on who are they really and what is really bringing them joy. And then that's, you know, if you focus on that, I think it really is kind of the key to like seeing the good, going back to the good inside of who they are.
I know. And I think, you know? As parents, sometimes we do project and say, oh, we want our kids to do this or be this, or we see them doing that, but they're their own person. Mm-hmm. So if you see the beauty in that, that kind of reminds me of Brenda Smart's episode. So Brenda came on and talked about a lot of different transitions of moving to different countries and different places around the world. And her husband were mission presidents in Puerto Rico, but she kind of talked a lot about her adult children and how three of the four of her children left, you know, her faith, which is the LDS faith, and how hard that was for her. But she had some such good, we had so many listens on this episode, so you know that it's important, but to people, but she just showed, you know, talked about loving your kids for who they are and what they believe in and not trying to like change them or have them be someone else. So that kind of is kind of like Rachel's quote that, you know, your unconditional love for your kids is the most important. And if they don't follow your belief system or the way that you live your life, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And you can still love them for them, and you can see beauty in that.
Yeah.
And see the good people that
and
they are.
It was cool in Brenda's because she was pretty honest about like, look, I didn't always do it right, but I've kind of
like almost like repair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Actually. And she's realized that, and it seems like her relationship with her kids is so good, and she just accepts them for where they are. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it's a beautiful conversation. Yeah. And I think it's
all
really important.
I mean, all of them are, but that it was unique because I think a lot of people have that going on right now. Like maybe your kids are leaving the religion that you raised them in, or maybe they're like politically not aligning with you, like whatever it is that like different ideologies, but she's doing such a good job of just sharing how you can connect, but
kind
of
build a bridge there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had Keisha Cox on, and she was awesome. Mm-hmm. She has adopted two children with Down syndrome and had one of her own that has Down syndrome. And I think she has seven kids. And we just were like blown away with her.
Yeah. She's amazing. Yeah. So thoughtful. Had some amazing, just, I don't know, life lesson quotes. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, I better write that down. Like, I know. I gotta remember that.
And she's also just so real and relatable and kind of vulnerable in telling her story and about the heart. And so the quote that she said in it is, "Find the beauty in the mess." Well, she said a lot of quotes, but one that really stood out to us: "Find the beauty in the mess and hold on to the hope through the hard." And we love that.
Yeah. I mean, that can apply to life.
Yeah.
I mean, cause life is messy, but if you can hold on to the hope.
Yeah. The hope through the hard things.
Yeah, and find the beauty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they've had to do that a lot because there are a lot of hard times with raising kids with, you know, more
special needs.
Yeah. Special needs. And there can be, but they, what stood out to us and we were like, they are just really good at rolling with things. Mm-hmm. Like her and her husband.
Yeah.
You know?
Just go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Roll with the punches, roll with the, just whatever. The waves,
the unexpected
whatever.
Unexpected things. Yeah. So it was, and I'm like, no wonder they could have seven kids and adopt two Down syndrome kids. They're just very good at that. So she was a great example of that.
Yeah. And then another one, we interviewed my daughter, Whitney. So we interviewed her twice. One was last year, kind of about moving to college and running the New York Marathon. But then we had her on again because she had a lot of other transitions. And I think a lot of us have college age kids or are going to very soon. And so she talked about kind of that college for her was hard, and she wasn't blooming where she was planted at this time. And it was just hard for her. And I think for me, I wasn't acknowledging the hard for her. I was more like, wait, well, college isn't hard. Like that, it was fun for me. And I didn't have a hard time my first year. Like, well, how come you're having a hard time? And I think that was a parenting moment where I had to be like, okay, I'm not handling this right. And I'm sorry. How can I handle this better and help you?
Yeah, you did a great job with that.
And now I think she, you know, is in a different environment and she's playing soccer now at a different school and she's really thriving. Like she loves everything about it. She loves her roommate. She loves college. She loves her, you know, her friends and soccer. And so I think my lesson with, I think that I learned from Whitney was, and, you know, raising her, but talking to her in this conversation is not projecting on your child and acknowledging their hard, like Becky says, like saying, okay, I understand this is hard for you. Like, I am having a hard time like understanding it because it wasn't hard for me, but I can see this is hard. How can I help? How can I help you through this? How can, you know, and I think my husband and I decided to kind of push her to stay for that second semester. And of course, in my head, I'm like, is this the right thing? Oh my gosh, she's really sad. How can we help her? And it actually ended up being a really good thing. And I think it showed her she can do hard things and that she can get through hard things, and then ended up having a really good last couple months, you know, of that really hard year. And she learned a lot from it and grew from it. And so like watching our kids struggle is hard, but you have to kind of let them do it.
Yeah.
Cause that's part of growing and learning. Anyway.
Yeah. That was, and it's hard to remember like when you're going through it, but that our kids will have different seasons like we do, you know? So like in that, like she's doing so well where she's at right now in college. And, but that was a harder season. But again, like you said, like that's sometimes when we grow the most and learn the most, but it's so hard as a parent
to let them and watch going through that. It is so hard.
And you don't ever want them to go through that. So, but that was a great episode. Like if any of the listeners haven't listened to that, and you know, you get to hear, it almost felt like, well, it was just a conversation. It was such a fun conversation, but we were hearing from you on it and from her, and
both sides of
a great discussion. And I think great for anyone that has kids like starting to enter this young adult phase. Cause it's just like great things that we can learn from.
Definitely.
So,
And then the two, we have one that we just released last week, Margaret Webb, and hers was really good about kind of raising neurodivergent kids. But also I think some of her strategies and her ideas and methods were really could be applied to any child for sure.
And even some of the examples she was using, you know, I feel like with some, with a child that has like a special need or neurodiverse or whatever, they might be a little more extreme on some of the examples, like the tantrums and things like that. But we all deal with that as parents. So yeah, listening to her, and she's just very wise. And I think, and now she's a parent coach and has written a book. And so I feel like it's just a great conversation to listen to. And she's just really genuine.
And it was really good. Awesome. And I liked, I think we put this quote this week, but she says, you know, talk about what's working, what's not working, and what we can do different next time. And I think you can apply that to your career, your relationships, parenting, you know, whatever it is, our podcast, like, you know, whatever that you have to kind of evaluate. And I think, and then be like, we talked with Dr. Becky, like have those conversations with your child. Like, okay, this is not working, the situation. Like, what can we do, you know, better to fix it, and what is working, and just have open conversations with your kids.
So. Yeah. Like that's such a great lesson to teach them, and take out any like guilt about it. Just like, okay, what's working? I mean, that's what I liked about her. She's very practical.
Yeah. Very practical.
Yeah. And it didn't feel, you know, it's just like, this is how it is. And this is how we do this. And,
It was one of those where I was like, oh, I hope everybody, a lot of people listen to this because this is such good advice. Like you said, so practical where it doesn't seem overwhelming and hard.
I know. Yeah. And she was very understanding and just great. Yeah. And then next week we have, some of you may know who he is. He's, his name's David Kozlowski, I think, or Kozlowski. He even's like, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. I don't know. He's a funny guy.
But yeah.
He was on, well, we interviewed him already and his will be coming out the week after this one. And he, was, used to have a podcast called Light the Fight with Heidi Swap. Yeah. And then now his podcast is called like OG Therapy. Yeah. But he's awesome. Just really fun, relatable for teens. And he's been through a lot in his personal life.
And I think that's why he can connect with teens. He had a suicide attempt. He had like depression and different things and a lot of kind of trauma in his life. And then he's turned that around to help a kids.
Yeah.
And teens. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's, you know, so his personal story is super interesting because he grew up with parents that had borderline personality disorder, which is just crazy. Think like learning about these different personality types and stuff, to me at least, is so interesting because I'm like, oh, and there are probably a lot more people than we realize that have these kind of things. But then he was just explaining like, how he went from that situation to where he is now and he's a therapist now and helping people.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing he talks about, and he has a book coming out about this, is he's coining it as social health. You know, we have mental health, physical health, social health, and how important it is, especially for teens, to have community, to have connection, to have people, you know, love them for who they are and feel accepted, is so important for their mental health.
Yes.
That we should start with the social health so we're like avoiding some of these mental health issues later. And I think it's really important. I was talking to my kids about it and they were like, yeah, that makes so much sense. And he has a program at Harriman High. There was a lot of suicides there a couple years ago. So they asked him to come on to do kind of this social health, and it sounds so cool. And I think every high school should have it. I think it's so important.
Yeah. And he is like building curriculums for different high schools. And he talks a bit about that as well in our episode. And it was really great. And he, just like you were saying, it's like social health is a precursor to mental health. So if we can intervene, there's always going to be kids that are like born with some mental health struggles or whatever, but sometimes we can prevent mental health troubles from getting to where they could be with the social health interventions. Definitely. and just educating the kids about it.
Yeah. To be aware and to, it's so good. But really anyway, good.
Yeah, we'll
probably wrap this up. I got to go get my carpool.
I know. We're like,
I have to go get our children. Yes. From school. Yes. But yeah, I just think these, if you haven't listened to these episodes, go back. They're so good. If you, like what Dr. Becky is kind of talking about, maybe start out with her TED talk, cause it's just a good summary of everything. And then she's been on so many podcasts. She has her own podcast called Good Inside. Mm-hmm. She has her book. Just some really good.
Yeah. The one that I listened to recently with her was on the Huberman Lab podcast. Mm. So, and it was only a couple months back. So if you're looking to just like more of a conversation style with her, I'd recommend
and
that
she
one.
Was on,
she's on, We Can Do Her
Things. Like three or four times. They love her.
Yeah. So. She talks about some super interesting stuff on those. Yeah. So
anyway, we hope you enjoy.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for listening. We hope you took something useful from this.
From
and like we said, maybe we will dive into some of our personal parenting transitions a little bit more down the road.
And season 3. So, all right.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and would love if you subscribed to the podcast and followed along as we continue hearing more inspiring stories. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beautiful Shifts Podcast, where we will post updates with our latest interviews.
We'd like to thank the band We the Lion for giving us permission to use their beautiful song Move Along for our podcast. Take a minute to listen to the song and the lyrics and enjoy.
I find a way to know myself. All my thoughts are mine again. And begin to understand where to go. Now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this journey as my own. Feel the strength right in my bones. All I want is to believe life is my own. Life is my own. I'll start again. My mind is free now. I can feel I'll take a chance, I won't be wrong. Yes, now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this.